welcome to this Canadian Opera Company podcast, sponsored by Decca, the opera label. My name is Jana Wichler, and with me today is Gianmarco Segato.
Hello.
Hello.
The music that we heard at the opening of the podcast was from the overture of Richard Strauss's Ariadne auf Naxos. Now, for anyone used to the huge orchestral forces Strauss used in operas like Salome and Electra, both of which the COC has performed in recent seasons, they'll be surprised by the relatively small 37-piece orchestra we just heard playing the overture. As we'll discover in this podcast, Strauss's musical style and intentions were quite different when he approached the mythological tale of Ariadne on Naxos, which, compared to some of his earlier works, is more on the scale of a chamber opera. The short overture introduces us to two of the opera's best melodies, the composer's ode to music and the Bacchus-Ariadne duet, which we'll listen to in their full vocal versions later in the podcast. So, as you probably guessed, today we're exploring Strauss's Ariadne auf Naxos, which is part of the Canadian Opera Company's spring season, running for 8 performances from Saturday, April 30th until Sunday, May 29th at the Four Seasons Centre for the Performing Arts. For tickets and more information, check out our website, coc.ca, which has recently been redesigned with larger imagery and more information sourceable right from the homepage. We'll take this opportunity now for our usual plug, alerting our listeners to all of the additional materials online at coc.ca, which are there to enhance your opera-going experience. This past fall, we launched our opera blog, Parlando, which has proven to be very popular and probably the most comprehensive source of up-to-date information on what's happening at the COC. There you'll find behind-the-scenes photographs of up-and-coming productions, interviews with cast and creative team members. For Ariadne, for example, there have been recent posts showing original costume design sketches by Dale Ferguson, and they're just beautiful, and the transformation of ensemble tenor Chris Enns into Scaramuccio. There's also an Ariadne quiz, there's Alexander Neve's blog, of course, and we're also on Twitter and Facebook, and we'd love to hear from you. So if you want to find out what's happening with our podcasts or give us feedback, please visit our Facebook page and let us know.
Yes, the costume sketches are fun, and they also show that in this opera, each character pretty well, I think, has two costumes. So they have their first act prologue costume, and then they have their...
They have the everyday clothes and then their onstage
clothes.
That's
right, yeah.
Yeah. And the best way to keep up to date with all that sort of information, special offers, things like that, is to sign up for eOpera, and that's something you can do on our website. Today we'll be listening to a Deutsche Grammophon recording with Deborah Voigt as Ariadne, Nathalie Dessay as Zerbinetta, and Sophie von Otter as the composer, and Ben Heppner as Bacchus. Giuseppe Sinopoli conducts the Staatskapelle Dresden, and this recording is available for purchase online at coc.ca, as well as the opera shop during performances of our spring run.
So we've got all that business out of the way, all that interesting business, and we'll get down to the opera now. One thing about Ariadne auf Naxos that is very interesting and kind of different is its actual source. It's kind of a concoction of the librettist Hugo von Hofmannsthal with Strauss. And if we think about, say, the plots of most operas, they come from a single source, like the Bible, or it's a myth, or an event from history that's been somehow embellished. But with Ariadne, they had the idea, Hugo von Hofmannsthal and Strauss, to combine opera seria, which is just means heroic opera. So if we think of something like Mozart's Idomeneo or the Clemenza di Tito, those are opera seria. The stories usually come from mythology. Mm-hmm. To combine that tradition with Commedia dell'arte, which is the tradition of improvised comedy in Italian theater. So the characters like, who are some of the main ones? Piero and Scaramuccio and...
Il Dottore.
Yeah, the sort of like stock comedic...
Figures.
So they wanted to bring these two traditions together, and we'll get into the details of that now.
On a slightly separate note, mm-hmm. if you're visiting Toronto, or you've never visited it, the Garden of Ceramics Museum has the most beautiful collection of Commedia dell'arte
right.
figurines, very small,
yeah.
and it's worth the price of admission just
yeah.
to see those little statuettes. If you have any interest in this particular
yeah.
art form, or in ceramics, it's a great trip.
It's incredible. I never tire of going back to see that. It's
no.
just fascinating. Just to give you a bit of background as in terms of the opera seria side of the opera, let's call it that, the more traditional side, the second half of Ariadne, which is called the opera, is based on the Greek myth of Ariadne, who was the daughter of King Minos of Crete. In the myth, she falls in love with Theseus, who is the son of the king of Athens, and he has been sent to the Minotaur's lair to be sacrificed. That's the idea anyway, that he won't make it out. And the Minotaur, of course, is the half-human, half-bull creature who lives in the labyrinth. Ariadne, you know, obviously wants him to get out, so what she does very ingeniously is to give him a ball of yarn so that he can unwind it as he's going through the labyrinth and therefore find his way out. Exactly. So he's successful, he kills the Minotaur and he finds his way out. The lovers are reunited and they sail off happily to the island of Naxos. But things don't end well. Theseus kind of dumps Ariadne, leaves her on this island. And that's the point in the myth where our opera starts, at least the second half of the opera, where she has been left on the island and she's lamenting Theseus' betrayal, I guess. So here, what we'd like to do is just perhaps clarify the structure of Ariadne off Naxos a bit more. The first part, which is called the prologue, takes place backstage, with opera singers and actors preparing to perform a new opera, which is titled Ariadne on Naxos. And this opera has been composed for a wealthy gentleman, and the plan for the evening is for it to be performed and then to be followed by a show of done by the troupe of comedians, the Commedia dell'arte characters, and then a fireworks display to end the evening.
That's a great night.
Yeah, full night. A little bit of comedy, tragedy, and then, you know, the fun at the end. During the prologue, the composer of the opera, who's a character in the prologue, he becomes furious when he learns the decision to present this comic work following his own very serious opera. And then he is subjected to even further indignity when he learns that in order to avoid any delay to the all-important fireworks display, that his opera and the comic work will actually be performed at the same time.
That's an insane challenge for a composer.
Yeah, it's an insult.
Yeah.
So it's all backstage mayhem with egos and tempers flying, and above all, the composer's desire to be true to his art. And if you just think of that sort of farce, the English farce, Noises Off.
Noises Off, absolutely. The backstage, the front of stage, and you get to see what's happening.
Door slamming, that kind of thing. Exactly. That will give you a really good idea of what to expect in the prologue. Then, in the second half, in the section that is actually called the opera, we get to see the performance of the composer's opera. It tells this traditional story of Ariadne, which we've already recounted a bit here, lamenting her loss of Theseus, but it's not a straightforward account of the myth. What's happened is that the comic troupe of Commedia dell'arte players keeps interrupting the so-called serious story with jokes and quips, and they try to cheer up Ariadne because she's just a sad sack. You know, sort of, woe is me.
And Zerbinetta in particular, as another woman, is saying, come on, Ariadne,
exactly.
This isn't the way to handle it.
No,
you know?
No. Zerbinetta's great. She's kind of like very practical about her attitudes about men. And it's basically,
absolutely.
You know, you kind of love them and leave them and move on. Yes. That's her attitude. You know, you don't lament.
It's a great clash of two personalities.
So it's sort of an unusual opera in its structure. And I really can't think of anything else in the commonly performed repertoire that is like this, you know. They really came up with something new. And it's not only in the story that this novelty is reflected, but also in the music itself. So, for example, the comic troupe, which is headed by Zerbinetta, her music is very, I'm not going to call it light, it's not easy to sing, but it's light in texture. She sings a lot of coloratura, a lot of high notes and sort of music that you would associate with a comedy. And then her sort of backup singers, as I like to call them, the Commedia troupe, who are led by the Harlequin, his music and the music that he sings with the other Commedia characters is often very tight harmonies, and they kind of sing backup, cheering up poor old Ariadne there. Whereas we contrast this with the music for the so-called heroic characters, so Ariadne and Bacchus, they have much grander music, longer vocal lines, and fuller orchestration beneath what they're singing.
Glorious music.
It's thrilling. So we're going to go back now and listen to some of the music from the prologue. There's a lot of bustle that's happening. There's all the backstage preparations. But there are some quieter, more reflective moments. And I think one of these, and one of the most beautiful moments in this opera, is a tender exchange between Zerbinetta and the composer. Now, Zerbinetta can be a little bit of a flirt, at least on stage, and she catches the eye of the tempestuous composer. And in their little duet, she explains that although on stage she may play the coquette, she still has depth of feeling and can feel sad inside. And before we listen to the excerpt, I just wanted to mention, because you'll be hearing two women singing, and we keep singing about the composer, that the composer is actually a pants role and sung by a mezzo-soprano, or sometimes a soprano.
No, it's a male character sung by a woman.
A woman, exactly. So we'll hear now Nathalie Dassée Zerbinetta and Anne-Sophie von Otter in Ein Augenblick ist wenig, ein Blick ist viel. And the translation of that is, a moment is nothing, a glance is much.
Thank you.
One of the most exciting things about our spring production of Ariadne is, without a doubt, the stellar cast that's been assembled. We've brought together a world-renowned cast who are not just wonderful singers, but are especially known for the roles they'll be singing in Ariadne. In the title role, we have the great pleasure of welcoming back Canadian soprano and Toronto resident, Adrienne Piojonka. She sung Ariadne in some of the world's greatest opera houses, including Vienna and Munich. Her Ariadne has consistently been hailed as not only one of her greatest successes, but one of the finest portrayals of the role to have come along in a long while. When she appeared in the role in Vienna, the Viennese newspaper Der Neue Merkur said, "We have not had such a wonderful Ariadne in a very, very long time." And I think that's something coming from Vienna, which has quite a long tradition of Strauss performances going right back to his own time. More recent performances with the COC include Leonora in Fidelio, Elizabeth in Don Carlo, and Adrienne will be appearing as Tosca next season in early 2012. We'll listen to some of Ariadne's glorious music now, sung by American soprano Deborah Voigt. We'll hear Ein schönes Wahr, hieß Theseus Ariadne, an aria in which the abandoned Ariadne, this is in the second part in the opera section, speaks as if in a dream, remembering the love she shared with Theseus, which, after his abandonment, she wants to forget.
It's time.